Welcome back, everyone, to another episode of The Damage Report. We have been, two bad things have happened. One, we're starting late, obviously, because big tech companies, fresh off of kicking Marjorie Greene off social media, decided to ban us for 10 minutes. They do have too much power. Anyway, but also, I'm still in the shed. I'm like a little bit congested. I feel mostly over whatever I had, but just to be extra safe, I've decided to stay home. So for one or two more days, you're gonna have a shed show. But only today, though, we have something special for you. Francesca Fiorentini. Francesca, how's it going?
Shed show. Shed world's show. Dirtiest streams. Tonight on Animal Planet.
Pretty
John
clean
Iderola. Shed show. I'm sorry. Happy New Year.
Happy
What's
New
up,
Year.
Dragon Squad?
Here's
Good
what
to
I
see
need.
You, John.
Yeah, we're having one other additional tech problem. Can you can we take the one shot of Fran? Fran, can you vamp for 10 seconds for me?
Yeah.
Tell me about the most recent episode of The Bituation Room.
Oh my gosh, what's up, Dragon Squad? Everyone should listen to or watch back The Bituation Room podcast at Fran Ifyo. We had the two hosts of Conspirituality, which is a podcast that talks about how the wellness world and the QAnon world and the MAGA world collide.
Yes,
so watch that. It was so good. Yeah.
We have, there's a HuffPost reporter, Jesslyn Cook, who has come on our show over the past like 2 years. And like all along the way, she was like charting like mommy bloggers and fitness
yes.
bloggers, like gradually becoming more and more QAnonish. Anyway, yeah, I just had a flickering light I had to fix. But anyway, very excited to have you back. We're back on like a normal schedule. I guess the era of the 4 day week is done, unfortunately. It was a great time. But what we have for you today is a lot of news, including the story we just alluded to. We've got perhaps a debate about a move from Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, updates on January 6th, a whole bunch of stuff. Also, the campaign to blame the left for an election that hasn't even happened yet during a time when they're not in charge has begun. So that's gonna be fun. And oh, and a board game story. Is it a board game I'm gonna wanna play? Stay tuned to the end of the show to find out. But along the way, if you wouldn't mind hitting the like button, sharing the stream, that would be great. Before we jump into our main stories though, I just wanna briefly mention a couple of things that I noticed that we don't have time to devote to. We might do them tomorrow, maybe. But just so that you know, Devin Nunes has resigned from Congress. He's out
Bye.
To go work for Trump. Like, I just don't. It's like, you know, I just started watching Succession, so I guess I'm gonna make everything a comparison of that. It just feels like some petty thing they do in Succession, like leaving a government office to go work for Trump's thing. It's not gonna last. It's not gonna work. He's gonna make $5 million, but.
Yeah. Nunes is very much a character in Succession. Yeah, true social, man. Get with it. It's gonna be great. It's gonna be bigger. Hey, you heard of like, you heard of Universal? Yeah, bigger than Universal Studios.
So we have that. Bolsonaro, Jair Bolsonaro, back in the hospital due to, I believe it's being termed an intestinal blockage at this point.
Oh no.
So as suspected, he is full of something. You can guess what it is. So anyway, obviously best wishes to Bolsonaro. Anyway, and also the Senate is apparently going to join, this is according to Chuck Schumer, is going to vote on some sort of rules change to the filibuster. I don't know the content of the rules change. I do know the content of the Senate though, which doesn't give me a lot of hope that it'll work. Francesca, what do you think?
Yeah, no, I mean, I'll believe it when I see it. I think Schumer dropped the ball on the entire Build Back Better negotiations. So we'll see. Like, yeah. I'm like, I'd love to be surprised, wouldn't we?
I mean, I don't know. Just nothing's gonna happen. Nothing good anyway. Anyway, with that, why don't we move to our actual content? We are gonna still be taking one break. Obviously, we lost a little bit of time, so feel free to send us comments and tweets and all that, and we'll respond to some in a little bit. But with that said, why don't we jump into this? Down goes Marjorie Greene, at least on social media. Now, you are already probably aware of this. She has been apparently permanently suspended from Twitter. Twitter put out a statement through a spokesperson saying, "We permanently suspended Marjorie Greene for repeated violations of our COVID-19 misinformation policy. We've been clear that per our strike system for this policy, we will permanently suspend accounts for repeated violations of the policy." And you know, we also just found out that she's apparently been suspended on Facebook for a day. We'll see. This is sort of like, if Twitter is going to have accountability, anything headed by Mark Zuckerberg can have 1/1000th the accountability, I suppose. But anyway, it's been almost exactly 1 year since Trump was permanently banned on Twitter because it was believed that he was inciting political uprising and violence and all that. And this means that we will miss out on Marjorie Greene tweeting on the 6th. You fill in the blank on what you think she'd be tweeting on that day. I can say that her recent Twitter activity leading up to the ban was pushing for a national divorce and attacking the holiday of Kwanzaa. So American culture, Francesca, has clearly lost a lot from her no longer being on Twitter.
Well, I just want to say that this is exactly like the Holocaust. And now I know I'm not supposed to make those comparisons, but I feel like it is very apt. Did you know that 6 million Jews lost the ability to tweet right before they died? And that was like the first, that was actually the real thing, in fact, because if you can't tweet, it's like you are dead. Anyway, you can't hold me accountable.
You died the true death.
You died the true death. This is all good on Parler, even though Parler sucks because there's no libs to dunk on.
The best part of Parler has always been screenshotting my Parlers and then tweeting them. I look forward to doing that on into the new fiscal year. So anyway, look, now technically she is still sort of on Twitter. Her official congressional Twitter account, as you can see in the screenshot, is still active. Historically, she has not been particularly interested in using that because that's the sort of account where you would, for instance, tweet work that you had done as a congresswoman, legislation you were working on, maybe thoughts that you had had. And so it was a bit content poor for a while. We will see if she will try, as Trump did in his immediate ban, in the immediate aftermath of the ban, to just use whatever Twitter account he still had access to. You remember they had to go around like bopping gophers on the head as he used like every family Twitter account.
Hey Mark, come here. Can I see your phone? Mark, no, Mr. President, no.
Yeah. So maybe that'll happen. Now, why did they do this? Well, back in March of last year, Twitter announced that it would permanently suspend accounts that received 5 or more strikes or notifications about posts containing misleading information about COVID-19 vaccines. So look, I can't speak for Twitter, but I can presume that the idea is that they believe that influential accounts with a large following purposefully and habitually misinforming people about a pandemic mid-pandemic might lead to bad outcomes. And they didn't want their private platform to be a venue for that. She kept doing it over and over and over. Last July, she received a 12-hour ban. Then in August of last year, she was banned for 1 week. She was fully aware of the policy. Every ban was slightly longer than the last, and she knew what would happen, but she just kept tweeting misinformation. On Saturday, she tweeted that the federal government was ignoring extremely high amounts of COVID vaccine deaths, which is not true and doesn't exist. But she has a following and she is convincing people that they might die if they get the medicine to stop them from getting COVID. And so now we get to have a debate, Francesca. Was this acceptable for Twitter to do?
Yes, it absolutely was. I think, you know, it is always difficult when you talk about deplatforming, because I think deplatforming often falls on the backs of specifically progressives and leftists. And traditionally, those are the folks who've been censored. But more and more extremists are the right wing and they should be deplatformed. And that is a good thing. And of course, it doesn't mean that the movement or the anti-vax or the, you know, anti-science misinformation goes away, right? It goes to other places, Parler and Telegram. Yeah. And it only, you know, it also makes them a martyr. But my God, like, look at a year since Trump has been on Twitter. Has it been a less toxic internet? Has our discourse been like impacted positively from that? Yes. So I think Zuckerberg needs to get on board with this. A lot of people
who've been spreading anti-vax conspiracy theories are still allowed on different platforms. Some are on Facebook, some are on Twitter, on Instagram and Twitter. Obviously, I know it's the Instagram and Facebook are the same thing. If they code their language enough, the problem is Marjorie Greene didn't code her language. But when you do, you get around all the censors and it's fine. You can stay as long as you want.
Yeah, yeah. No, she's not going to code much at all. She's not one of the more clever ones of that bunch. But anyway, look, I think you could have a complex, multifaceted conversation about what sorts of, like standards of language and stuff like that, standards of fact checking are appropriate for public platforms, and in particular when it comes to politicians. But I think a lot of what you are probably seeing in the immediate aftermath of her being banned is not that. It is people who, to one degree or another, are like Marjorie Greene, effectively grifters who spread misinformation purposefully as their career. And they are not going to like someone being banned, even if it's obviously within their rights. This is not a government body. They're allowed to have standards that are clearly posted, that she's known about for a year, that she repeatedly purposefully violated. But they will pretend that all of that doesn't exist. And in fact, the only thing you need to know is, hey, there's the First Amendment and she spoke and they banned her. Okay, yeah, that's the level of discourse that we're gonna have. So I'm sure some people who are also worried about being blocked from spreading their grift on Twitter will hate this. For those of us who would like less people to be dying constantly from COVID, maybe it seems like a good thing.
Last thing I'm gonna say is I really want the right wing to get on board with things like greater regulation of big tech. They always love to whine about big tech, but what they wanna do is they wanna get in behind closed doors into meetings with Mark Zuckerberg and convince him to essentially, you know, skew the algorithm in their favor, as if the right-wing outrage is not already skewed in the favor of conspiracy theorists like Marjorie Greene, right?
Yeah.
But what left-wingers want, what we want, is greater regulation of a completely out of control conglomerate internet that is like squeezing out smaller voices, and lets hate speech run rampant. Dare I say, even nationalize, although in the hands of someone like Trump, that'd be terrible. But I'm totally on board with someone like Senator Warren's efforts to break up big tech. When is the right gonna get on board with breaking up big tech? Or do you just wanna play, like have them play more in your favor? You just wanna bend the rules. You don't wanna actually change the rules. You want special privilege.
Yeah, no, they don't actually want, they're not, they pretend they want regulating. Their whole thing is not regulating business. They want business to be able to do whatever they want, but they want the business to be bent to benefit them, which it already is and will continue to be. That's all. They will continually threaten some sort of regulation that never actually manifests. But anyway, by the way, I just want to point out, in terms of like their supposed opposition to any sort of like canceling her for misinformation or whatever, let's transition just briefly into this. In the wake of her being knocked off of Twitter, Joe Rogan has started an account on Getter. It says, just in case S over Twitter gets even dumber, I'm here now as well. Yes, so he is just there in case Twitter gets any worse or more censorious, not to appeal to the right wing guys on Getter. That's not what Joe Rogan would want to do. But anyway, he's on Getter. So that's the one that Jason Miller started. He told Fox News at the time that it would be independent from social media monopolies. Well, it's a separate company, I guess, by its very nature, but you would love it to be the biggest only game in town. So that's nonsense. Independent from cancel culture, embracing free speech. Okay, well, they already canceled the term griper, the racist term griper, after Nicholas Fuentes was banned. And so they banned him, which I think makes sense, but they're saying they wouldn't do that. So then in response, his followers started using this word a bunch. So they banned the word. Again, they say that he violated clearly defined terms of use, which I think they get to have. But they say that social media companies do not get to have terms of use. And they certainly shouldn't be banning people or words. That's a violation of free speech. That's cancel culture. No, you are demonstrating that platforms do have to balance these sorts of things. And so again, this is a part of the potential conversation around this that we will not really have, but it does exist. They're gonna have these issues too, if they last long enough and get big enough to actually have a problem with it. It is almost the 1 year anniversary of January 6th. And woo-hoo. With that comes, I don't know, but I am worried about what might be done on the 6th. We do know a few things that are gonna happen that are scheduled at least, and that is vigils. Not like vigils for democracy or for those who were injured or died as a result of the attack. No, vigils for the people who participated in the attack. So let's see, on December 20th, Look Ahead America tweeted about their plan. They said they're doing vigils at the DC prison and nationwide on the 6th to honor those who have been politically persecuted and to commemorate Ashley Babbitt and Roseanne Boyland. So Ashley Babbitt's gonna be commemorated, and those who were politically persecuted. Now, by politically persecuted, they mean were locked up for attacking the Capitol. They are not saying those who were almost politically persecuted by having the results of a fair election be overturned by a bunch of maniacs. That's a type of political persecution they're not particularly interested in. But anyway, there are gonna be these vigils now, Francesca. And hopefully that's where it stays. It is possible that this day could become some sort of like rallying point in the year for crazies though.
I feel like those vigils are like decoy vigils for the FBI to, you know, round up any stragglers that they haven't yet arrested. Be like, yeah, wow, real shame about Ashley. I know, I was right there next to her, and you're done. But it is sad to me, and I do, I hope this is not the case, but it's sad to me that like the mass mobilizations around January 6th are in the right's favor on so-called honoring someone like Ashley Babbitt and people who stormed the Capitol rather than the others who died, like Capitol police officers, as a result of what happened, or just like mass movements. And I think this speaks to a lack of connection from both the Democratic Party and politicians in general, and like the grassroots of the majority of the United States. And I think the majority of Americans, I know it's hard to believe, but I think the majority of us think what happened on January 6th was bad for democracy, for the Constitution. And I wish there was a, you know, a solidarity vigil or demonstration that said, hell no, we're not gonna let this happen again ever. And there needs to be accountability. And we will see, how that all plays out. But let's remember what the lessons we actually need to learn from this.
Yeah, and let's hopefully remind people in positions of actual power of those lessons. Because in some ways they're taking it seriously. I mean, I guess they have their commission or whatever. In terms of actually doing anything to stop it from working the next time, we've got basically nothing that has happened nationally by the Democrats at the state level. We're just as vulnerable as we were, if not more, because the legal playing field has been even more biased towards the Republicans with the laws that they passed. There are additional vigils, by the way, 5 states, North Carolina, Georgia, Arizona, Florida, South Carolina. So, you know, if you're interested, feel free. I love people participating in democracy, preferably not in the overthrowing of it. By the way, here, this is a fun little, Telegram ad for one of these by the Prisoner's Record. So they are talking about POW J6. So they have taken the prisoner of war thing. So wait a second. Were these just peaceful protesters or were they warriors in the middle of a war? I think you're undercutting your thing. It also says, by the way, note, please do not wear attire or bring signs referencing political parties, candidates, or other organizations. Yeah, no, that's a good idea, but I think we know which one you support without the sign. I don't think you need to wear the sign.
Anyway. Oh my God, that is all you need to know about how much these people actually respect the military. Back the blue. We're going to rip off the POW like emblem for people who stormed the Capitol. And also, a fair number of them were former military. Yeah. Right? And that it's an introspective moment. And I still feel like we haven't had that, you know? We had like General Mark Milley and other folks who've like been out in front, but like who is answering for the fact that so many people who stormed the Capitol were former or current law enforcement or military? Like there needs to be a reckoning around that. The call is coming from within the building, people. What is wrong? Oh, no, 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 no. Let's sign a $700 billion check to all of the defense, American defense budget. Get everything you want. Let's just expand our nuclear arsenal. That's great. Let's give everyone a raise. I'm not against raises, but my God, you need to be rooting out the white supremacists and the insurrectionists and like in your ranks. And what is it about your training that leads you down this primrose path?
No. Yeah, no, we'll just have the occasional awesome, well-researched article in The Intercept or, I don't know, Public Integrity or Vice about like white nationalists in like infiltration of the police or special forces. And then we'll go, oh, that seems scary. Well, moving right along. Yep. We won't do anything. And if we did try to do anything, Tucker Carlson would turn it into a nightly crusade to stop any reform from happening. That said, we do have one other aspect on January 6th. So let's turn to this. We have a little update on what the January 6th committee is up to. I wish it was coming from anyone other than Liz Cheney, but unfortunately she's the one we've got. She went on, ABC News this weekend, and here's what she had to say about some of the recent findings.
The committee has firsthand testimony now that he was sitting in the dining room next to the Oval Office watching the attack on television as the assault on the Capitol occurred. We know, as you know well, that the briefing room at the White House is just a mere few steps from the Oval Office. The president could have at any moment walked those very few steps into the briefing room, gone on live television, and told his supporters who were assaulting the Capitol to stop. He could have told them to stand down. He could have told them to go home. And he failed to do so. It's hard to imagine a more significant and more serious dereliction of duty than that.
Is his failure to make that statement criminal negligence?
You know, I think that there are a number of, as the chairman said, potential criminal statutes at issue here. But I think that there's absolutely no question that it was a dereliction of duty. And I think one of the things the committee needs to look at as we're looking at a legislative purpose is whether we need enhanced penalties for that kind of dereliction of duty. But I think it's also important for the American people to understand how dangerous Donald Trump was. We know as he was sitting there in the dining room next to the Oval Office, members of his staff were pleading with him to go on television to tell people to stop. We know Leader McCarthy was pleading with him to do that. We know members of his family. We know his daughter. We have firsthand testimony that his daughter Ivanka went in at least twice to ask him to please stop this violence.
Okay, so much of what she revealed there, I feel like we either specifically knew or believed to be true. Maybe the Ivanka going in twice might be an addition, but so they're like looking into it, I guess. There's something, but what is their solution? Enhanced penalties in the future, she said. Wait, you mean so like the next time a president sits by as a mob attacks the Capitol, in the aftermath of that, will have enhanced penalties. So wait, so you're saying we not only had to survive the one attempted insurrection, but in your hypothetical, we would have to survive another one and then maybe there would be penalties. Oh, good, good.
Yeah.
It just doesn't seem like much, Francesca.
Yeah, impeachment could mean something at some point. That's the thing. Our democracy has not been prepared for someone like Donald Trump. So what are you going to do? How are we going to Trump proof? How are we going to authoritarian proof this country and our government going forward? And they're out of ideas. They're like, well, maybe our slap on the wrist will be a little bit harder, if you know what I mean. The dude was sitting eating popcorn, laughing, mouth full. I'm surprised he didn't choke that day, just like out of laughter at the chaos he created. And also, come on, guys, imagine if he had gone on television and said stop. Number one, it wouldn't have done anything because people knew that hours before he was in front of his own mob saying, we're gonna go forward and basically violently take power. That he was encouraging and inciting people. So you gotta go back farther than that. Oh, is that not far enough? Should we go to another rally where he encouraged violence? Why don't we go to a different rally? Why don't we keep on going backwards until the entire Republican Party condoned and allowed themselves to be taken over by a demagogue? Look, I actually am like happy that Liz Cheney is speaking out. I'm not someone who's gonna say, F you, Liz Cheney, forever. I know who your daddy is, even though we know who your daddy is. But like, we do need people and Republicans like Liz Cheney standing up and actually saying the realities that are before our eyes. But you gotta do better when it comes to actually preventing this. Good for you on speaking out, but we need better solutions.
Yeah, I personally think, you know, and we'll talk about this more on the anniversary, I guess, but my view 1 year out is they will not succeed in overthrowing the government if they don't try very hard. I think that's the thing that will stop them. I don't think that Democratic leadership, Joe Biden, the DOJ, Merrick Garland, anything like that is really doing anything. They have tried to provide some disincentives to do an uprising. If you're one of the regular people, maybe they've sent some of them to prison for a few months or whatever. But in terms of if you were one of the political or media backers of it, nothing. Seemingly nobody was responsible for the event. Individual people at it were responsible. Some regular guy beating a cop with a flag is responsible. But the people who got them there and sent them there and stuffed them full of insanity, none of them are responsible. None of the politicians. None of the pundits. And so why would any of the politicians and pundits back off from doing it again?
Yeah.
They're all fine, if not like have more devoted bases than they did the last time. So
this whole year has been like, you remember how long January 6th felt? You know, it was like the 4 hours that nothing happened and they were not contained. And they just left. They just kind of got their yayas out and like left the Capitol, right? This entire year has felt like those 4 hours of waiting for some kind of accountability. Paul Gosar, Andy Biggs, all the Congress people, Marjorie Greene, Lauren Boebert, all the people who met with these rioters. What's gonna happen to them? I mean, we're gonna do a top 10 list in a little bit, John, about our predictions for 2022. But and you're welcome for mentioning that. But I wonder if we're gonna see a single congressperson held accountable for this. And losing your committee positions is not enough.
Yeah, especially when they weren't interested in participating in those committee meetings to begin with. Governor Greg Abbott of Texas, who has largely downplayed anything he or the federal government can or should do to stop COVID from running rampant through Texas and the country, is now saying, hey, federal government, we could use a little bit of help. Maybe setting up some testing sites, getting tests and things like that. And they do need it. Texas has a lot of cases, nearly 11,000 cases last Thursday. Updated numbers coming out today will of course be significantly higher because they are nationwide. A more than 26% test positivity rate, over 5,500 COVID-19 hospitalizations. So it's bad there. It's not as bad as it is in some states like here in California or in Florida or New York. But Texas once again is being hit hard. And so he is requesting federally supported COVID-19 testing sites, medical personnel, and increased monoclonal antibody allocations, because as we reported last week, they were running out even just last week. And for right wingers, that's like literally the only thing that you're supposed to take seriously in this is taking those antibodies. So not good when they're running out of that. So he put out this statement saying detecting COVID-19 and preventing COVID-related hospitalizations are critical to our fight against this virus. While the Biden's administration has cut supplies of monoclonal antibody treatments and testing kits when they are needed most, the state of Texas is urging the federal government to step up in this fight and provide the resources necessary to help protect Texans. Testing sites, additional medical staff, and continued shipments of therapeutics from the federal government will help us continue to save lives and mitigate the spread of COVID-19. So he wants to save lives and he wants to prevent COVID hospitalizations. It is critical, in his words, to do that. Well, what do we know might not stop you from getting some of the more recent strains, but will significantly cut the chance of you being hospitalized? Previous vaccination. And he is one of many Republican executives who last year banned private businesses from issuing COVID-19 vaccine mandates. And he has spoken out against mandates for months and months and months. That could have stopped people from getting hospitalized with Delta and with Omicron, Francesca. But Texas's rate isn't as high as it could be. And so now they're getting slammed. And so they want help.
Nothing about vaccines. Just like completely silent about vaccines or at all. And like, I have criticism over the Biden administration for this week effectively giving up the ghost and the fight against COVID-19 by saying, nah, quarantine to 5 days. And it's all on your personal decisions to get vaccinated. But my God, it's part of the way we stop this. And yes, federal testing access is huge. But when you're Governor Greg Abbott, pick a lane, bro. Either the government needs to leave me the hell alone. This isn't real. Texas strong, don't mess with Texas. Or no, this is real and we need assistance in all these different ways. But you can't just jump to the monoclonal antibody. No, man, only Rogan gets that. Mm-hmm. Rogan, the president, probably Gwyneth Paltrow, and other people. Go to Austin. They're all in Austin. That's where your monoclonal antibodies are. But like, it is also, it is just very upsetting because what's happened now is that Joe Biden is effectively saying this is on states to, you know, combat. Yeah. And while I do want to call Governor Greg Abbott on his utter hypocrisy, I also want to say that the federal government has a role. Yeah. And Biden can't abdicate that role right now. And whether they like it or not, yeah, get tests to people, because the people of Texas don't deserve the leadership of Governor Greg Abbott. I mean, they deserve far better.
Yeah, yeah. Point out how wrong he is and then provide the help. That's what I would believe, no matter how reprehensible I find him or other people in positions of authority in Texas or in other red states. They do need more testing sites. I don't know exactly what it's like in Texas right now, but have you tried to get tested in California? I would love to go get a test today. It's basically impossible. It is so difficult or so expensive. And so, yeah, states do need that help. And they do need more of the antibodies, but they also need people to get vaccinated. What a stupid strategy. Let's just get it. Get it, and then we'll do a $2,000 pop treatment for it. That's the sort of thing that makes sense to a multi-hundred millionaire like Joe Rogan, but to regular people, no. And to do that and pretend that what you're doing is like sticking a thumb in the eye of Big Pharma while you're pushing people to take literally the most expensive treatment for this when vaccines are free is insane.
That also has to be administered by hospital staff and workers. So like, let's talk about nurses. Like, how are nurses doing in Texas? How are hospitals doing? I don't mean the institutions, I mean the people who have to work day in and day out inside of them. So like, by the time you're gonna get a monoclonal antibody treatment, like you're already backing up your all of your hospitals and your health system.
Yeah, 100%. And by the way, it's bad in Texas. It's bad. I just want to update you on the nationwide numbers. So the average case count now has surpassed 400,000, way higher than the previous peaks, as you can see in that graph. Let's see, hospitalizations are up 35% over the past 2 weeks. Deaths are down 3%. So it is continuing to look as if hospitalizations will not keep the same close relationship with cases that they did in previous peaks. But that does not mean that hospitalizations and deaths are not going up. They indeed are. You can see that it is overwhelming multiple states. Omicron overall might indeed be easier in terms of the severity of the cases. And certainly if you've been vaccinated, it appears that it can be pretty mild. But there are still tens of millions of people running around in America that have willingly forgone any vaccination, and they are being hit hard by this, and they are going to hospitals, once again risking overflowing hospital capacity and making it so that not only can they not get the help they need for dealing with their COVID cases that require hospitalizations, but the continued flow of people who are getting heart attacks and having issues with strokes and all that, regular stuff, they are going to be running up against this overflow as well. So let's just bear that in mind. As I said 1,000 times, you can get vaccinated today. Go get vaccinated if you haven't already.
Yeah, get boosted. Please get boosted. Yes. And also, this seems to be following the same trajectory as, you know, COVID OG, the first one. So hitting, you know, like places like New York or Los Angeles. And these are also places that have very high vaccination rates. Other places are still dealing with Delta, which is not as transmissible as Omicron. So what happens when places with lower vaccination rates
get hit by the far more transmissible Omicron? Is it going to be as mild then? I doubt it.
Yeah, 100%. Okay, everybody, we're going to mix it up and actually take a break. And when we come back, I've noticed a little trend beginning in the media. It's not fun, but we're going to have some fun with it after this. The season of political endorsements has begun with the former president, Donald Trump, endorsing Viktor Orban in his bid to continue on as Hungarian prime minister, saying, "Viktor Orban of Hungary truly loves his capital C country and wants safety for his people. He has done a powerful and wonderful job." Who's done a powerful job in protecting Hungary, stopping illegal immigration, creating jobs, trade, and should be allowed to continue to do so in the upcoming capital E election. He is a strong leader and respected by all. He has my capital C complete support and endorsement for re-election as prime minister. So look, you know, if Trump is endorsing someone, it is a good bet that they are not necessarily sending their best. In this particular case, though, he's just an authoritarian who's trying, like Trump, to dismantle a democracy. So I believe this is literally graphics we've read before, but just to catch you up a little bit. After winning Hungary's election back in 2010, he systematically dismantled the country's democracy, undermining the basic fairness of elections, packing the courts with cronies, and literally taking personal control of more than 90% of the country's media outlets. He has openly described his form of government as illiberal democracy, which Zach Beauchamp says is half correct. So look, I guess, Francesca, it's not surprising. They've talked previously about, you know, the right in America of liking Orban. Tucker Carlson has done his like fawning interviews. This is just a European proto-dictator, effectively.
Yeah, and it is chilling to know that the right in this country, in the United States, loves him so much, and that people like Tucker Carlson go to Hungary and do interviews with him, that they, and what they stick on. And this is, I think, what we need to remember, is that Trump is an idiot. He's fun sometimes to talk about, especially when he's out of power, like he has been for the last year. But the people behind Trump, people like Steve Bannon, they absolutely are in favor of autocrats around the world taking control. Illiberal democracy is what they want. They don't even want the democracy part. In fact, these folks do not think that democracy is worth it. They've given up on it. They think that Western democracy is crap. Instead, they want top-down dictatorship. And what does that mean? It means you don't have plurality of voters, that people of color, that immigrants are sidelined, that borders are erected and clamped down upon. It means that LGBTQ people, they are discriminated against. It means women put back in the house, take away their, take away their vote. That is what an illiberal so-called democracy is. It's that, hey, we tried that Western stuff. We don't like the EU, militarism, war, and fascism. It's just fascist. And so the more Orbans we get, I mean, if we had an Orban in this country, which again is kind of a smarter Trump, and we may still, then we are definitely doomed, as I scratch my head nonchalantly.
Yeah. And look, the one thing we have going for us is that it's been telegraphed. We see it coming. We just, you know, it's like you're traveling down the road and you see that there's a brick wall, and then you look and, like, you know, Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer and Joe Biden are at the wheel, and they won't give it up. Like, but the wall's right there. It's really far still. It's like a half a mile. Could I just for a little bit, could someone on the left take it? No, we can't. And so they're very clear. They want American democracy to go the way of countries like Hungary, and like we have historically seen inside and outside of Europe over the last 100 years. That's what they want. They're being very clear about that. Their year-long campaign to like laud and memorialize the people who attacked the Capitol, it's all so abundantly clear. Mm-hmm. The only question is, will we stop it from succeeding? And so far, the evidence does not look great. So the right has spent the last few days freaking out about the fact that Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez has taken a vacation during the winter with her boyfriend to Florida. Now, the fact that she's on vacation, the fact that she has gone to Florida, that has got them incensed. And we can talk about that. But they've also narrowed in on a particular issue that they have. So Steve Cortez tweeted, if leftists like AOC actually thought mandates and masking worked, they wouldn't be frolicking in free Florida. By the way, Florida is like riddled with COVID right now. But anyway, apparently it's free according to him. Also, her guy is showing his gross pale male feet in public with hideous sandals. And he attached a photo and circled a man's foot in a photo as a criticism of a congresswoman. That is a literal thing. Steve Cortez was a commentator on Newsmax. He was an advisor to Donald Trump. Like, this is one of their guys. And that is the criticism he decided to make. Well, AOC decided to respond. And we could have a debate about whether she should have. We already have internally in our production team. But she said, if Republicans are mad they can't date me, they can just say that instead of projecting their sexual frustrations onto my boyfriend's feet. You creepy weirdos, which is my favorite part at the end of that there. Very like Kristen Bell. Anyway, it's starting to get old ignoring the very obvious, strange, and deranged sexual frustrations that underpin the Republican fixation on me, women, and LGBT plus people in general. These people clearly need therapy, won't do it, and use their politics as their outlet instead. It's really weird. And she closed by saying, the fact that these people are so creepy and weird, yet they are the ones responsible for shaping news headlines we all see in media should be really concerning. I don't even want to know what knuckle-dragging thoughts these people have all day while covering women in politics. So what did you think of the response? Do you think that she should have responded at all?
Well, I definitely think she should have responded. I think that AOC has shown that clapbacks are, we live in a time of clapbacks, and she does, and she does them well. And they gain her popularity, and I think it's good. And I also think that it's good to name the sexism. We all know the obsession with AOC is very much tinged with this bizarre, like, no, why won't you date me? You know, and so just name it, put it out there, and I think it can neutralize it. Obviously, it's ridiculous for this dude to like talk about her boyfriend's feet, and also what a good partner she is for being like sticking up essentially for her boyfriend and being like, hell yeah, that's my man's feet. Yes, they are big. Say something. But I just want to.
Okay.
Anyway. I do, which is what my response would have been, which is why I will never be a politician.
Yeah, probably. And also, look, I think personally, I don't generally wear sandals, but like if your issue is going to be with him wearing sandals, like it's, you can barely see his feet. It's such a weird thing for him to have focused on. How much work do you, like I could look at that photo for a solid minute and not even realize that he's wearing sandals. You can barely tell, but Steve Cortez, man, he instantly sharpied it. Highlighter, I can't see past the feet. Anyway, look, I'm really of two minds. I respect her enough that I don't want her to have to respond to things like this, but she gets to, and expecting that she should always be above it when her opponents constantly aren't seems like an unfair standard. I don't know. It's complicated, but I definitely think that a lot, like she's getting attacked for this defense of herself, which I think is totally unfair because indisputably the criticism of her is at the very least tinged, as you said, with sexism. But that the right wing guys, like she is not being unfair in pointing out that their sexual frustrations are coloring this, because I think it's fairly clear and has been for a long time that is the case. They just don't like it being pointed out. Okay, with that, we have only a little bit of time. We're a little bit behind on the rundown. What do you know? We lost 10 minutes, so that's gonna happen. But with that, let's launch into this. We are into an election year, and although the elections are still like 10 months away, that doesn't mean we can't launch into one of the best parts of an election season, preemptively blaming the left for results they're not in charge of. Yay! So I saw this tweet and just felt, ugh, so now I'm gonna inflict it on you. Hillary Clinton warns Democrats against far left turn before 2022 midterms. That seems fair. I mean, why not? After all, In 2016, we chose the more moderate candidate who then lost, and that was in fact her. And then in 2020, we chose the more moderate candidate, and hey, he won. And it's sort of going the way that we predicted. In neither case has the left literally ever been in charge of anything. But why shouldn't we be responsible when a moderate loses an election or when a moderate presidency doesn't succeed because of the obstruction of other moderates? Mm-hmm. Why wouldn't Ilhan Omar be responsible for that? Francesca, you're on the left. Explain yourself. Why are you all ruining it for us good centrists?
I don't know. I think progressives have a weather machine. I'm just gonna say it. I know it's a trope about progressives, but they do. And they control the weather in DC. Everybody knows this. No, and it's just amazing to me, you know, beyond the headline, you listen to what she said, and she is basically saying, you know, we have to think about how to win in purple states, i.e. like red states, you know. And again, there's so much to unpack, but this is nothing about, hey, without abolishing the filibuster, our democracy is totally effed. Hey, we can't even get, you know, any kind of voting rights enshrined. Let's talk about that. Let's talk about how our country's been drifting to the right by through gerrymandering, through all kinds of shenanigans, through voter suppression, and the Democrats have been okay with that and not doing anything to pull us back into the realm of fairness. No. We're just gonna continue to blame progressives, who, by the way, gained seats in the House in 2020, even though the moderates, the centrists, they lost. To say nothing of centrist on centrist crime, as you alluded to, between people like Joe Biden and Joe Manchin. So yeah. Spare us, Hillary, spare us. You lost. Understand why you lost. For the love of God, go on another hike, and I really hope you find out the reason why.
Yeah, and you can be mad about it, like people pointing out in the chat that she won the popular vote. Yeah, if I won the popular vote and lost, I would be really mad too. But I would also wonder why. And it's complex, and not all of why is necessarily directly her fault. We live in a complex world. It's not, you know, popular or lucrative to admit that on political talk shows. You're supposed to pretend that everything's coming up Milhouse for your political ideology constantly. But anyway, you can try to learn lessons. I don't feel like the lessons to be drawn from the last year are that difficult to come up with. I think that when you get into office and you make promises, if you can't make good on it, that's gonna be bad for you. Especially if the promises you made are to do popular things. She seems to be indicating that they shouldn't be pushing for things like the reconciliation bill when we know, and I don't wanna relitigate yet again how popular so many of those provisions are, including in the so-called purple states that she's particularly focused on. And so if you get in and don't do anything, that's not gonna be popular, but that is always their strategy. Just like they honestly think that you should just act as if the GOP is a T-Rex, and they won't see you during elections if you don't move. Certainly if you never do a single thing, they can't fight me if I don't move. Yes. But the voters can see you, and they see that you're not moving. Like, yes, you need to do something.
I just want to point out also, the last thing is that, you know, everybody says, oh yeah, defund the police really hurt the Democrats. That slogan, oh, no. Actually, in counter to that, the movement around George Floyd's murder, the massive movement from the fastest growing bloc in this country, which are people under the age of 30, that movement helped Joe Biden get elected. For better or worse, whether or not Biden has made good on anything that he promised to do around criminal justice reform, it helped the Democrats, right? Guess who lost voters under 30? Hillary Clinton.
Yeah.
So you don't know where the new voting blocks are coming from. You don't know how to speak to young progressives, which are the fastest growing block of voters in this country. So stop pretending.
And how about we just try, as a lark, for a treat, to try a progressive sometime? Like, can we do one in our life? And maybe it won't succeed, but has this been working for us? Whether they get into office or not, is it really working? Can we try something new? Can we have a contested primary at least? can we just have a contested primary? Can we have one good progressive running in the primary? And can they win for once? That would be an amazing thing to mix things up with. Anyway, we don't have time. I'll just flash. Chris Matthews also believes that the left is in control, I guess. Joe Biden, lifelong communist, obviously. Don't trust these people. Anyway, you can trust us at least to come back from this break with more news. So don't go anywhere. We'll be back in just a few minutes.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.